Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Welcome to Switched On Pop. I'm musicologist Nate Sloan. One of the most inventive and gifted musicians working today is Jacob Collier. Maybe you know him from his YouTube videos. Or for co-writing SZA's Good Days. Or from performing alongside Joni Mitchell at this year's Grammy ceremony.
I've looked at clouds from both sides now. From
up and either way, Jacob is a musician with thunderous chops, proficient on multiple instruments, and with a voice that ranges from bass to soprano and everything in between. Over the past few years, he's managed to release several records, net collaborations with everyone from Michael McDonald to T-Pain, and become the first British artist to receive a Grammy Award for each of his first four albums. His latest, Jesse 4, is the conclusion to his Jesse quadrilogy, and it features a kaleidoscopic range of styles from Indian sitar to Colombian reggaeton to a haunting Simon and Garfunkel cover. So this week, we're going to take a look inside the work and process of a musical mad scientist. Our resident songwriter, Charlie Harding, sat down with Jacob to learn about his new record, his collaborators, and the beautifully unique way he sees and hears music.
Jacob, thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You are releasing the fourth album in this massive arc of a quadrilogy, Jesse. You started your musical journey on YouTube, had your first album In My Room. And then you embark on a quadrilogy immediately. Why such an enormous project?
Well, I made In My Room in solitude, right? Completely by myself. And that, as an adventure, was incredibly educational, very joyous. And I had to sort of dig very deep into my soul to dredge up this album. And I toured the album solo for 2 years with a one-man show. And I learned so many things. But by the end of that time period, I just realized to do the next phase of learning that I was craving, I had to do some collaboration. But I thought, well, how can I collaborate with all these people that I love at once? You know, I feel like, you know, the best way to learn music is to learn it from those who you love, you know, those who make the music that you love. And so I thought, what if I made a massive album, one massive album? It began as one album. And I made this dream list, you know, like all these crazy names of people I'd love to meet, love to work with, love to throw paint with. And I sort of soon realized, you know, this is not one record. This is more than one. Mm-hmm. And so it became two. So I was like, this is a double album. It's a big old double album. And then I realized that was like breaking at the seams. Thought, I think this must be three albums. So then for a while it was three albums. And three just felt inconclusive because it felt like each of them, you know, were in their own world, and I wanted to create a fourth album, which kind of joined the whole thing together, sort of fused the worlds together. So thus the quadrilogy idea was birthed, and I originally wanted to do all four albums in 1 year back in 2018. Quite a Jacobian construct, that kind of ambition.
Jacobian. But tell me, what is Jacobian?
Oh, it's just something that Jacob would do.
Large scale. Maximalist.
Big and brave and fairly ambitious and borderline impossible. But it turns out that particular idea was impossible. And so it's become, four albums in 6 years instead of 1 year. Yeah. And I've learned so much, and it's actually crazy and a little bit emotional that the journey is kind of coming to an end now. It's wild.
I want to talk about some of those collaborators. There's amazing ones, but I do want to dive into some music to begin with. Where does our character find us? The beginning of Jesse 4. Maybe who is our character?
Yeah.
And I want to meet them at the opening track, 100,000 Voices.
This is so exciting. I've never spoken about this album before like this. So this is very, very cool.
Wonderful.
For me. Thanks for asking these questions. 100,000 Voices is where the journey begins. You're very, very far from home. You're kind of as far from home as you can imagine being. You've gone on this crazy journey that's taken you through multitudes, universes, all sorts of crazy, you know, parts of the world, all sorts of, across Volume 1, Volume 2, Volume 3. So this is kind of where the character is dropped, and it's like in the midst of literally 100,000 voices, so 100,000 people, all with their own ideas, cultures, opinions, motivations, momentums, whatever. And so you're kind of on a street, and you're surrounded by all these people talking, chattering, rapping, and you're hearing go past you all these different kinds of grooves, different kinds of beats. So you hear like a reggaeton beat over one speaker, you hear like a funky thing on the other, it's gospel, you hear some hip-hop beats and stuff like that. And around these beats, you're hearing all these different voices. There's about 10 or 12 languages, different languages of rappers who are muttering things. So some of these rappers appear later on the album. Some of them don't. But there's Chinese rapping, there's Mozi rapping, there's Spanish, there's Japanese. And so all these different voices, they kind of appear. And you're walking. You're walking forwards. You're walking somewhere. And you're drawn up the staircase, and you hear the character walk up these stairs and open a door. And then there's like a huge auditorium of audience members and an orchestra.
Yeah.
And as you walk in, there's this hush. It's kind of like everyone goes like, and there's a hush. And then the audience begins to sing. And this is, we can get into this later, but it's one of my current fascinations, is the power of an audience singing together. It's really sort of haunted me and something I really obsess over. So the audience sings this A. You know, when an orchestra tunes up, the way it tends to work in classical music is, you know, the oboist will play an A, you know, the orchestral violins join in, everyone's open stringing and everything's tuning up. And it's just a really powerful sound, especially as someone who, you know, who grew up going to listen to orchestras play. And my mother used to conduct orchestras when I was young. She still does. And so that sound of like, okay, something's about to happen. The show's about to begin. You know, that feeling I love. But it's the people that tune the orchestra, right? So the people go, and the orchestra goes, you hear French horns, you know, clarinets and violins, all this kind of stuff go. And the sound grows and grows and grows. One of my biggest inspirations in music is the THX theme.
Yeah, you know? I caught that.
It's such a great sound. Yeah. And so I've always wanted to hear an orchestra do that. And I've also always wanted to hear a choir do that. And so I actually recorded both those things in the real world. I recorded an audience in Sydney singing that THX sound, which I can explain later on.
Tell me about it.
Well, okay, so one of the main theses for this album, in a sense, is the idea of the audience choir. The idea that everyone in the world has a voice, if only you offer them the permission to use it, right? And I've been traversing so many corners of the world, getting audiences to sing and exploring the power of strangers, you know, 2,000 strangers, 5,000 strangers singing together.
You have many gifts, but one of your magical powers is that you can get people to sing in multi-part harmony. You also have very talented listeners and fans, but everybody starts to sing in multi-part harmony, and you move it all around.
It's such a joy.
It's one of the most beautiful things that we can collectively do together.
Thanks so much for saying that. It really is something I feel immensely grateful to get to explore in real time with people, you know, because I don't have a master plan really, other than I know it's possible for people to tap into this inherent musical framework that everyone has, because everyone listens to music all the time. So everyone has a sense of where harmony is and where music is in their mind. And so my job on stage is to just provide very clear gestures up and down where notes are going to be rising and falling, and to kind of guide the room normally in 3 to 6 parts through a series of chords. And it's a beautiful, transformative, very, very special feeling.
And so you did one of these in Sydney, which is a live version of the THX song.
I did one of these in Sydney, yeah. Well, so I did 91 shows in 2022 with my band, and I recorded every audience choir.
Yeah.
And so this song literally has 100,000 voices on it.
Oh my lord.
It's actually 100,000 real humans.
I know that Apple expanded the number of tracks available in its software Logic so that you could go up to, I think, 1,000 or more voices, which you had been pushing the limits of.
Right.
And so you have pushed the limits of the number of human voices all singing together in this moment.
Yeah, well, it was an amazing sound. It was quite an ambitious thing to do. In fact, this song has over 1,000 tracks in it. So I actually broke the broke the track limit, which I was quite proud of. But these audiences all together singing, it's like this massive wall of humanity. It's a glorious sound. It was December 4th, 2022, and we were in Sydney, and I tried something that I'd never done before. And I said to the audience, you know, okay, sing a D major chord, you know, like, so thanks very much. And then I said, okay, now everyone sing the furthest note away from the note that you just sang. absolute chaos, like the worst chord in the world. And then I stood on one side of the stage, and I actually said, okay, by the time I get from this side to this side, you have to glide your note from that note that you just sang, the chaotic note, to the first note that you sang, which is your note in D major. And let's just see what happens. Let's just see how it goes. I can actually play you a video right now.
Oh, I'd love to see.
On my phone.
That gave you chills, gave me chills.
It's crazy. So that's literally the sound you hear at that moment on the track.
Mm.
And I then wrote out these orchestral parts that had like strange slidey lines between notes and stuff. Mm. And I had the Metropole Orchestra, which was conducted by my mom, Susie Collier. She and I kind of devised a plan as to how to get everyone in the orchestra to glide their notes to a note in D major. And so, yeah, you hear this hybrid between the Metropole Orchestra and the Sydney Audience Choir. But yeah, going back to the
visual, the journey. Where are we now? Okay,
it's like you've been in the most chaotic, unknown environment.
Took a walk somewhere.
Surrounded by people that you do not know, languages that you don't know, cultures that you do not know, and you're kind of just like out on a limb, and you find your way to this kind of symbolic room where the people of the world or the idea of humankind catches you and lifts you and. The character lifts up into the air and you're sort of suspended. It's almost like the main character converges and collides with all the other characters who you've met. And it's like we are one character. From here on out in the album, we will walk together in this unified spirit of D major-ness, you know.
Mm.
And this song kind of takes you on this, it takes you on this journey and almost describes the spirit of this, which is you're walking out somewhere and you're kind of searching for something. You're searching for answers. You're searching for, maybe it's a person, perhaps it's a feeling, perhaps it's yourself. And as you walk and as you meet these people and as you hear these voices and as you hear these sounds, you kind of learn who you are, which literally feels like what I've just been doing for the last 5 years with all these albums. It's like I walked out of my room, the room I made this first album in, by myself, into the wildest, craziest collaborations of my life, into the, you know, the strangest, most bizarre, most inspiring corners of the world. Every continent of the world is represented on this album. And it's through all these other people's voices, audience, choir, 30 collaborators, orchestras, choirs, everything, that I've kind of found my own voice in a sense. So you know, you say, well, who's this character? It's not technically me, but there's definitely a lot of me in it. And I've just been so inspired by that feeling of going out and searching for myself, by which I kind of mean everyone, because I think that everyone on the planet is experiencing a lot of the same forces just in parallel situations. And one of the most beautiful things about the audience choir is, you know, you get everyone to sing, you ask everyone to sing, and you're immediately reminded just how unified we can be in a very simple way.
Mm.
You just all sing, you know? And so it was around that feeling, I think, that I designed this song and also designed this album.
We've already gone on this amazing adventure. We're not even at the end of the first song.
Yeah.
Because things take a really sort of dire twist.
Yes, they do.
Almost into the world of like djent metal.
Yes,
at the end. And you're singing, moving into this section, I think some of the lyrics before and into it are, I just want to be ordinary. I just want to live my life. I don't want to waste my life. Can you tell me about that movement into this very heavy, intense space at the end of these 100,000 voices.
I think we live in a world of extremes. At least I definitely feel like I do, internally and externally, you know, and you feel one thing really strongly, maybe it's peace, and then you feel another thing really strongly, which is panic, you know, or you feel a sense of real knowing, and then you feel a massive sense of unknowing. I felt it was worth exploring this properly at the end of this song. You know, you've created this massive beginning of this journey, you know, you've kind of expanded the horizon, you're walking forwards, everything's really joyous and big and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And it's almost like you're dreaming, and then you kind of wake up from the dream a little bit. Here you've got, let me be angry.
Let me be angry.
Let me be patient.
Let me be patient.
Let me be happy.
Let me be happy. Let me be ordinary. Ordinary.
Let me be ordinary, ordinary, ordinary. And the drums are going, no, bass, guitars. And then as you walk forwards, you kind of get smashed over the face with samba. It's like an ocean wave that comes and just covers up everything that you were doing, and you kind of get swished up into this powerful feeling, and it's like the finger snaps and you're in like a little cafe. And there's this like Bulgarian folk music playing over the speakers. It's a sample. I sampled the incredible Bulgarian female choir of television and radio, one of my favorite groups, musicians in the whole world. And I meet this kind of other character who actually returns later in the album. It's actually Jessie Reyes is the real human being who plays this character. But she's almost like someone who's working in this cafe. And she says, in Spanish, she says, you know, can I help you with something? And I say, oh.
Yeah, I was actually, I was wondering, do you guys have any...
And then in comes this, you say this sort of gent, massive death metal smash thing, which is really, it's quite alarming when it hits. It's a shock because it's almost like you're just beginning to settle into the journey and everything. And Willow Smith, who's one of my favorite musicians in the world, she screams this stuff. And we sat together and came up with this kind of like supercharged phrases. And I think, she sort of says, time, like, because I'm saying, do you guys have any time? And she goes, time. Because it's like the panic takes hold. You know, I think as a person, I also just feel there literally is not enough time in a day. I feel like that it's probably the most shocking and surprising moment on the album in a sense, because it kind of just goes bang. but the lyrics are true. You know, it's like, I do want more time and I do need more time. And I do feel that desperation. So I'm just like, being a human is hard. It's crazy. And how am I going to make sense of the world? And I just don't know what to do, you know? And so I really relished in the enormity of that moment and those sounds. It's a very kind of animalistic, primal roar. For me, it's quite an unexplored thing musically thus far. And I think that humans need to express that sometimes, even if it doesn't quite make sense. It's like just, it's a bit like, let me be angry, you know, as the lyric said about 50 seconds prior, it's like, let me let it out. You know, let me explain what this journey is. Let me be the whole of myself.
In the introduction of an album, it's appropriate.
I would say so, yeah.
It's a bit of an overture. It's kind of a want song at the same time.
Exactly.
It gives us a taste of what's to come. None of the other songs have the same degree of bombast. Well, they all have a lot of... There's a lot of energy in this album.
Yeah.
But few go as many places as this.
Right. I definitely wanted to kind of take the rocket for a test ride, you know, kind of thing. And there is a sort of good-humoured vengeance, I think, I feel, to some of those people who in the early days were like, stop experimenting, just toe the line, you know?
Mm.
And you just think, man, in 2023, there are so many musicians who are courageously... And you could say bombastically, joyously colliding forces and colliding ideas.
Yeah.
I love it. I've always loved it. And I think it's the coolest and best time to create music that I've ever known. But yeah, there's an amount of like, let's go, you know, like nothing is off limits. Let's explore every edge and every nook and cranny.
I'm realizing that one of the expectations of you is you represent something very special in the world of music, many things. But one thing that comes to mind is that I've gotten to meet and chat with a number of your collaborators.
Oh, cool.
Kimbra, Emily King, Lawrence, Lizzie McAlpine have all been on the show. Your name comes up not infrequently.
Yeah.
And I'll even just read you a message that I got today. Clyde Lawrence of the band Lawrence said, "I'm always amazed by how sort of open-minded and humble of a collaborator he is, despite being so brilliant."
Oh.
And I hear this thing over and over where you collaborate with people of very different kinds of languages of music. I'm teaching at NYU a music class right now, and I always try to emphasize people, you can't be a good or a bad musician. It's like, you're good at all languages or not. There's so many different languages.
Oh, absolutely.
And one of the expectations of you is that you are now becoming a place where you attract people to collaborate with that are teaching you, and you are teaching them this larger set of languages that can maybe only occur on an album like Jesse Four. Like, Jesse Four can only exist because of all these gifts that have been exchanged through you and your collaborators.
Oh, I love the way you put that. It definitely feels like a trade. It's like, oh, I've got some gemstones. If you give me some of yours, I'll give you some of mine. Yeah. You know, it's like I've been collecting all these magical things from all over the world. But it does feel like an exchange, because I think that ultimately, as an artist, your most valuable asset is your perspective. And the more perspectives that you can be accustomed to and learn and understand, the better of a musician you are. And so it's been a really big sort of a capacious endeavor for my brain to have to kind of stretch and learn how to speak in these different worlds. You know, collaborating with, say, someone like Hamid or Umu is exceptionally different from collaborating with someone like Ty Dolla $ign, you know, or Chris Martin or Stormzy, you know, Kirk Franklin. Like, these people have such specific worlds, and the joy for me has just been being able to walk around in these people's rooms for a little while and get to ask them questions and find common ground. And one of the craziest and most beautiful things I think I'm learning is just, you know, one note will feel right to one person and wrong to another person. So there literally is no such thing as a right and a wrong note. You can make a decision that feels strong or a decision that doesn't feel strong, but ultimately, it's just about the perspective. It's just about the context that you put a note in. You know, so I mean, like, to give you a musical example, is this? Oh yeah. So when I was growing up, you take the chord C major, one of the most classic chords of all time, and you take the note C sharp, right? And you think, oh, that note doesn't belong in that chord at all, right? But actually, when you sit with it for a little while, if I put the C sharp up an octave there, and I put the C major down here, and I add a couple of other notes in, you can totally make that note make sense. That's like a really bright sound, or a chord like this, which is like a kind of like a C minor chord. It doesn't matter that these two notes rub when they're next to each other, because all you need to do is look at this note from a slightly different perspective, and it makes sense. Or say, for example, you know, this C sharp in A major, right, is a particular pretty world. But then if you right, same note, different chord, different world, different context, different perspective, but the C sharp is still a C sharp, but it makes two completely different kinds of sense. And navigating that in harmony, but also in storytelling and also in collaboration is just, I get a massive kick out of that.
Let's go into a specific example. I really love the song A Rock Somewhere.
Oh, thanks.
And here you're collaborating with Anushka Shankar and Vajrashi Venugopal.
Vajrashi Venugopal, I think is how you say it.
Thank you. Vajrashi is a
extraordinary singer from Bangalore, India.
God, okay. So, and we have Anushka Shankar, who is, you know, sort of one of the most acclaimed Indian classical performers.
Sitar. Yeah.
I'm on a rock somewhere. When I think of this collaboration that you've done with her, I think of her father, Ravi Shankar, collaborating with Philip Glass.
Yeah.
Trying to forge two really different worlds of music, Indian classical music and sort of minimalist contemporary art music.
Mm.
Both Indian classical music and Western harmony are deep, deep, deep spaces.
Yeah.
Right? They can converge, but often they also will diverge. Can you speak to how you go about building this kind of collaboration, working in two different sets of harmony and ways of thinking about music?
Yeah.
How does that come together in a song?
I mean, yeah, it's a deep one. Indian music is a deep universe, and something that you can only ever be a student at, you know, unless you spend multiple, they say multiple lifetimes, you know, learning these instruments, learning these systems. But I think that there's some overlap in my fascinations between the two. I think one thing I love about Indian classical music in terms of harmonic language is that notes are fluid and tuning systems are fluid. So there aren't any locked structures like on this piano I'm looking at now.
Right.
There aren't lines between the notes. You can glide. And actually the art of the phrasing and the communication and the emotion comes from how you bend between these notes. I mean, you go back to the THX inspiration.
It's right.
That is literally my favorite thing ever. So, you know, when Anushka, she came over to my room in London probably about 6 weeks ago now, and the first hour of the session was just me like asking all these questions. Like, okay, tell me how this works. Like, what are all the ragas that you would use in a situation like this? Like, what could be one where the major and the minor third are both there? Like, how do you think about this? How do you bend the notes? Why would you bend the notes? Like, how do they feel? And it's wild, you know, as someone who plays the guitar, you know, when you play the guitar and you want the notes to go up and down, you move your hand up and down the fretboard, right?
All right.
On the sitar, one fret, you can bend one fret over a fifth. Like, say from like that note to like that note. That's all on one fret.
Wow,
and these frets are enormous frets. And so the crazy thing, watching Anushka play was her control, her kind of like vertical control. It's you know, less about horizontal movement and more about that kind of, and the way that she'll tug on a note or glide or just control. It's really magnificent. It's an amazing thing to watch. And so we spent quite a long time thinking about, you know, what kinds of shapes that the lyrics were talking about, what kind of arcs that we wanted to create. And I wanted at the beginning of this song to give Anushka just a moment to say something that she wanted to say, you know, to play something that felt right. And there was this sort of C tempura drone that was going. And so she does this beautiful kind of arcs, these melodic arcs. The interesting thing for me about this song, not just harmonically is the other languages different, but also sonically, it's very far from, in a sense, from certain kinds of Indian music that I've heard, definitely from Indian classical music. You got this kind of, you know, electronic, you know, sort of. I call them ploips, you know.
Ploips?
Yeah, ploips, P-L-O-I-P-S. They're underrated.
This is different than a plunk.
No, plunks are totally different.
Okay, yeah. Just want to make sure.
Yeah. I would say Anushka provided the plunks or the sploinks, you could say. and I was more of a, you know. But I really enjoyed the infrastructure of that mixing with the Indian classical music. And I was quite sensitive to Anushka's taste too, because I wasn't sure how she'd respond to the demo.
Mm.
And I wondered if there would be a part of her that would kind of be like, I don't know if this works, you know.
Yeah.
You can't put sitar on like an electronic, whatever. But one of my favorite things about Anushka is just she was wide open. She was like, I love this meeting of worlds. It's so not trying to be Indian classical music that I can bring something that's very deep in that world, and that creates like a sort of contrast, like a sort of like an alchemy against the Western, some of these Western sounds, some of these Western chords. I think my favorite moment of that song is that there's a moment after the second verse. I'll be waiting on the world, only waiting on the world. So you're kind of, I guess you're loosely in like C minor. And then she goes. And she does this crazy melody in C major, which is so far from A flat. And it's like she opens this trap door and like this heavenly light kind of comes in. And I recorded some dhol drummers, like D-H-O-L, which is kind of like street drumming from India. Like a lot of the kind of the Bollywood stuff, like the all that kind of stuff, that all exists in with dhol and Bhangra, all that stuff is super popular. But that's very far removed also from Indian classical music, which is much more about tabla and all sorts of things.
Sure.
So having the combination of this kind of these big sounds with some of the electronic drums with Anushka playing, even just within India, that's a convergence of foreign worlds. And then bringing in the Western influence too. It's a very exciting combination. And it was just so interesting to hear Anushka speak about Indian collaboration historically, obviously with her incredible father, but also just in her own terms. You know, she's worked with, for example, the Metropole Orchestra from Holland, you know,
she's very wide-ranging
really
in her
broad,
collaboration.
You know, I think that's probably one thing I look for in a collaborator, and I value is just openness. That's it. You know, if someone's down to just try stuff out and go there, sort of go across the line, I always get delighted by that, because that's how I was kind of brought up in music to think too, you know.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Fox Creative.
This is advertiser content from 26.2 Team Milk and their new docuseries, Running Sucks.
Is running the worst?
Yeah.
Do you love it? Do you hate it?
I hate it so much. I hate it so freaking much.
That you're a real runner now!
I hate it.
I'm Abby Ayers, a 37-year-old mom from Utah who found herself running across the Manhattan Bridge in my first race ever.
Running Sucks celebrates women who run and the running communities that carry them across the finish line.
Running helped me in so many ways postpartum.
It really is about taking my power back and proving myself wrong.
For every person like you, I'm telling you, you belong, and I'm telling you, you can do it.
I never thought the words would leave my mouth, but yes, I'm planning on running a marathon. I can't even say it without laughing, because, like, who would have thought?
Watch Running Sucks at runningsucktheseries.com and learn more about how Team Milk is helping women runners across the country conquer their next course.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'd love to chat about a few more of those collaborations.
Yeah.
I'm always stunned, not just by who you work with, but by the pairings that you make.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this beautiful gospel song, Witness Me.
Witness Me, yeah.
Kirk Franklin, Stormzy, Shawn Mendes, Jacob Collier.
Yeah.
I never expected this combination. What are you looking for, not just in your collaborators, but in that group that you're bringing together?
All three of those men in this world represent such different things and come from such different places, but they have so much in common.
Yeah, tell me about what are your associations with each of them?
Well, they're three extremely warm people, mm-hmm. very, very warm people. They're very loving, fiercely loving people. And they love in different ways. You know, Kirk has a sort of like a ferventness to how he loves the world and loves God and loves his singers and his audiences. It's like he's like a supercharged Titan.
And he's his own musical world as well. Like, you couldn't just call him gospel music. Kirk Franklin's music is its own.
It's a sound. Entity. I mean, that the sound of those 15 singers or whatever that, has illustrated so many of the records that have taught me music and I've loved for so many years. Yeah, we went to Arlington, Texas to record with that group of singers. They actually ended up on 4 songs on the album. They just sound so good. It's crazy. And The setup is so simple there. They just have, for those of you who are interested in microphones, they have 3 C414s, one for each section of the choir. So sopranos, altos, tenors, boom. No bells, no whistles, just unbelievable musicianship.
And this is a utility microphone. It's a nice microphone, but it's a standard.
It's like fairly ordinary.
It's not fancy.
What is extraordinary is those singers, and it's the way Kirk kind of plays them. He plays them like an instrument. I watched Kirk. I've seen him do this from videos online, but he kind of like, he doesn't really sing, Kirk. Like he sort of shouts and speaks and preaches and things, but he doesn't actually sing.
Come on, rain down, check.
Rain down on me.
Every come to me, see, come
rain down on me.
Can you help me? Melody, check.
watching his body language kind of bring out these colors in this group was so profound. I remember there was one take we did for Witness Me where it's like, I'm with you. And they go, I'm with you, right? I'm with you here. I'm with you.
You are all I see.
You are all I see.
You witness.
Oh, oh, witness.
And they were singing these responses, and I thought it sounded great. I was like, man, that sounds amazing. And Kirk was shaking his head like, man, no, it's not it. I haven't got it yet. And he kind of scratched his head and thought for a minute. And then he goes, more John Mayer. And then the group singers are like, got it. And I'm like, what do you mean more John Mayer? And then they do another take and it's like, I can't explain it, but he heard a missing color in that group because he knows every part of what that group could do sonically. I don't know why I said John Mayer, but
another one of your collaborators on the album.
Yeah, who's also on the record, funnily enough. But there were levels I just couldn't have perceived deeper that Kirk was singing, but he loves so easily and fiercely and so extrovertedly. Hmm. You know, Sean is a sweet, sweet human, and he loves more. I would almost say he loves quite internally. He's quite an introverted person, and he has a beautiful, sensitive, and vivid inner world in this space, which, you know, we all do in a sense. But you know, Sean, like he's such a thoughtful guy, and I think when he thinks about lyrics, when he thinks about music, he tunes internally into something that's kind of like, that feels right to me. That feels right to me.
Dad's sick and your brother's not there. More drink, cause nobody cares, but I believe in you deeply.
And it's amazing, you know, someone like Sean, who's been through so much as an artist and has had such extraordinary pressure applied to him. He's had to develop, like many artists who I have worked with and collaborated on this album, you know, someone like Chris Martin is another example of this, but, you know, these people develop really, really strong North Stars in the pressure and in these environments so that they always know what feels right to them, and that's what they let guide them. So with Sean, you know, no amount of oh, this is a big opportunity, or this is going to pay a ton of money, or whatever, like that stuff that's not going to touch Sean anymore. You know, what touches Sean is, does this feel right to me? And this song, Witness Me, began with me and Sean. We sat together just by ourselves in Chris Martin's studio in Malibu, California. And we listened to a ton of gospel music together. And we bonded over the feeling of the joy, the sheer joy of it. We actually watched a bunch of Kirk Franklin videos. There's a video of him. It's really old video. He looks like so young, probably younger than me. And it's this song called Joy. It's one of his songs called Joy. Joy, joy, the Lord's great joy. Joy, joy, down in my soul. Sweet, beautiful,
soul-saving joy,
joy, joy. And then he goes, you know, he changes key, joy, it's just beautiful. Anyway, we watched that video amongst others, and we were just kind of like, man, how does he do it? How does he get that feeling? It's like, we were talking about the idea of much more we than me. That was like one of the sort of the thesis of the day. It was like all these artists in the world, and you know, I think I've been one of them at times. I think Sean's been one of them at times. You know, you're an island. You live in your own world, only by your own means, and you work for yourself. You work for your own world, which can be really important at different times in your learning process. But with Sean and with me at that particular time, this is 2021, I think we were both searching for ways to live for something much bigger than ourselves, you know? And a lot of the culture of the industry, a lot of the culture of just media in general right now is of people kind of perpetuating their own beliefs, and they bubble up and they look in like this. And I think that, yeah, Sean and I were just talking about how music can be one of the core and key languages and methods to get people to think bigger than themselves. And, you know, with Kirk, he does it effortlessly, and all those musicians do it effortlessly because it's about God for them, you know, and it's about the community, it's about each other. And the idea of it being bigger and greater than you, the artist, for me, for my career, it's so necessary and so beautiful. And so we wrote this chorus about the idea of witnessing another person, really seeing another person, being seen by another person, and opening yourself up to the idea that people can cross-section in beautiful ways. And we wrote the chorus there. The verse took longer to find. And yeah, it was almost 2 years later that I took the song to Arlington, Texas, and threw paint with Kirk. And it was what Kirk did to the song. I mean, it made me so emotional at the time, because it was just, first of all, it was what we were talking about when we first wrote the song. And also it just hits you so hard when you're in the room and you can like smell these singers' breath. You know, it's like, whoa, this is happening right here, right now. And the spirit of the musicianship is everything is about lifting each other up.
I'm here for you and whatever you're going through, whatever it is you can tell me, I know you do the same. I'm with you.
Anyway, all these ideas were permeating the process, and I think the last piece of the pie was Storms.
Yeah, maybe for folks who don't know as well, like what world is he coming from? What is his sound?
Yeah,
and what is he contributing?
Well, so Storms is kind of like the king of UK grime, like one of the most recognizable and most legendary parts of his energy is really kind of like high energy, upbeat, spinning on the mic like badass. Cutting edge, just like dissing people, being super hype and alpha male. You know, it's so cool. And that's how I became a fan. You know, you just say, you know, this kind of stuff.
Put your money where your mouth is. I don't want to talk about them. How they going to put money in my trousers? Look, I ain't trying to get caught like them. My big bros putting money into houses. You made all that dough just to go and buy clothes and put your last money in your outfit. That's not real. Little man, allow it. We stay chill.
But his record, the record that we worked on, was actually... It was much more sort of sensitive and quiet and softly spoken, and he really looked within.
Have mercy on them, Lord. I know you're with them in the storm, even though it's hard to see. Had to print you on a shirt, cause I knew you to a T. In a different situation, I imagine who you'd be. Have mercy on them.
It reminded me of Sean in some ways, because you know, Sean's written these absolute, you know, anthemic pop bangers that are loved by, you know, billions of people.
Yeah.
So, you know, same with Stormzy. And both of them are at a point in their career where they are choosing to look within and to find new colors and things that are sort of nestled in their, you know, unconscious and in the more gentle parts of their being. So when I sent this record to Stormzy, I had the feeling that he'd understand the essence behind it, because I'd seen him. I worked on an album of his latest album, and we all kind of lived on this island for a couple of weeks.
I heard them saying grime ain't dead. I'm Harry Styles, the way I find land tread. We got mainstream. Mind your business for you, mind my bread. If 10 million weren't enough, I'd make a lifetime pledge. All right, boy.
He did this thing when we were on this island and he was making this record where he passed this aux cable around everyone who was on the island, probably about 15 of us there. And he was like, well, play me a song that it means love to you. Like, what's love through this aux cable to you? Every one of us, we had to play a song. That's such a beautiful thing to ask a group. The results were so varied. I don't know, I think Stormzy he's one of these unique purveyors of the musical multiverse, in the sense that he can speak so many different dialects. He can absolutely rule the pyramid stage at Glastonbury, which he headlined back in, I think it was 2019. He can also be super hush, you know, and find something super sensitive. So yeah, when he came on, then there was Sean who sent his verse in, which he wrote like, you know, two years after the fact, he wrote that verse by himself. And the verse I did was one that we kind of crafted together. You got Kirk and the singers, you got Sean, you got Stormzy. It felt absolutely right, but I did not see that coming. I didn't see that combination coming. But I get a massive kick out of combining unusual, just like unusual combinations, full stop, you know, musically.
Yeah.
And also, I think with this album in a new way, in terms of collaborators, you know, there's a song on this album with Chris Martin and Esper.
Yeah,
on it, and
K-pop group,
huge K-pop group, like mad, like, so, you know, the new generation, absolute superheroes.
I don't think I'll ever get over you. Cause you're all I think about every time I hear you calling my name. All I think about is you.
And Chris, you're such a magnificent and resplendent force of joy, and such a dear friend to me. And but like, what a cool combination. And I just, I love the kind of the sparks that are created when you smash those two bits of flint. You're like, bang, and you get this unusual recipe, you know.
Maybe we can close out the musical conversation with a quieter moment in your musical multiverse, as you call it, which is probably my only really, truly, it's the only time I've loved the use of that word.
Isn't
the case of
it's
your...
It's a bit of a dodgy word, isn't it?
But... I really like your musical multiverse a whole lot.
Yeah,
and,
oh, thanks.
You have a collaboration with Brandi Carlile.
Yeah.
A Little Blue.
Little Blue, be my anchor, be my light, my compass star, be my darkness, be my day.
And this song really struck me because we were talking about earlier some of the expectations that you that people might have of you.
Mm.
I first got to know your work through long explanations of negative harmony,
yeah.
Something I'm not totally sure of still.
Yeah, me neither.
Through, you know, these very deep, complex, rich choral arrangements and covers of songs on YouTube. And you said, you know, people expect to be surprised.
Mm.
What I love about the song Little Blue is that it really feels, it does take us on a journey, but it feels a bit like a lullaby.
Yeah.
It's quite sweet. It's quite simple. It's melodically very, just a simple little arc.
Mm.
It's harmonically not too complex in its core.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet, there are these moments that you give us that I feel like tie a simple, beautiful lullaby with some very virtuosic moments of sort of surprising harmonic places that are fitting to the world that you're building. Could you tell me a little bit about the making of this song and how you make these choices of where do we want to stay, where we might just have triad chords, something very basic? And when do we make the choice to go into these sudden surprises?
Yeah, oh, it's a lovely question. I think, well, the first thing to say, I suppose, is that I think there's an important difference between virtuosity and complexity.
Mm.
I think virtuosity is about quantity.
Mm.
And I think complexity is about depth, in a sense.
I appreciate that.
And so I feel like with Little Blue, in a sense, that song is more, even more complex than other more virtuosic things I've done in the past.
Yeah.
Because of its dimensions.
Yeah.
And the friction that, you know, you can make, for example, between a lyric and a chord or a change or a sound.
Might you give some examples?
So, for example, in the chorus of that song, you know, you've got, it goes, don't be afraid of the dark in your heart. You're gonna find a way to carry the weight of the world on your shoulders. You're gonna find a way home. Right. So really simple.
Really lovely, though.
Sonically, you know, you've got, well, first of all, you've got 5,000 voices. You've got audience choirs underneath this, which is a very complex sound.
Which have built up from originally just you and piano. It starts very, very, very quiet.
Starts very simple.
And then it builds, yeah.
And builds. But the complexity about the sound world of that chorus is not based in the chords. It's based in the sounds because the sound of 5,000 voices singing is gorgeous. Anyway.
Mm. Don't be afraid. It's right.
There's also this heartbeat, you know,
to carry the weight of the world on your shoulder.
And so you feel this stuff, and it's the juxtaposition and the complementation between some of these sounds and the lyrics. I think that's what hits you dimensionally in the feels with this song. So, you know, as you say, I think harmonically the song is quite an open song. It's quite simple, which I really love. I love E flat major. It's just like probably the sweetest key. And so the verses just exist in this world, and the bridges kind of move around a little bit. The first one doesn't go too far out.
'Cause you're not so far away, I hear you sing.
That's a little bit of sweetness.
You'll never walk alone.
So really, the furthest you've gone from your home key of E flat major is changing this D to a D flat. It's just a little bit of darkness.
Well, in doing so, this is what I really love about the song. It's an appropriate moment. We're talking about feeling far away, and now it's like, okay, we do have to go somewhere that isn't totally safe.
Right. Well, the song is about, you know, the idea of being far from home and finding home, which is a theme I often find myself writing about. It's kind of what the first song of the album is about too, but in a very different way. But To accurately describe and portray the feeling of being away from home and then returning home, you gotta move people outside of the world. So going to D flat just feels like you've made enough contrast to then when you come back into this world, like the sun's come out again a little bit.
Yeah.
And the second bridge goes further out. It goes, 'cause you're not so far away. Here you see, which is already a big departure.
Mm.
You'll never walk
glow. Which is, that's the furthest you get away from the key, where E major is like, definitely not E flat major. And we're back to E flat. So it's just about weaving enough contrast into the story so that the lyrics are relevant to the structure and to the narrative.
But perhaps a younger version of yourself might not have that same kind of narrative connection. You know, I feel like especially as like an earlier student of music, I don't know when this might have been in your life.
Yeah.
But there might have been like, I'm just going to throw in this crazy run for no good purpose because it's really neat.
Because it's really fun.
Yeah. And fun is sometimes a perfectly good reason to do something.
Yeah, for sure.
But sometimes it doesn't fit the purpose of the song.
Yeah, exactly. I think that the songs tell you what they need. And the more songs you write, the more you realize what's possible with them. I would say, you know, even to kind of knowing myself as I did when I was 18 or 19, I think that version of Jacob would definitely still have said that every note and every passage, there's a reason for it being there. Mm. And every note, it helps the story to be told. Mm. I think they were just different stories in a sense. I think I was just so ravenous at 18 to try and push and explore and do all the stuff that, you know, you would just be so many different ideas in one go. And I think that in some ways, my attention span has grown. And I think in other ways, I perceive them as equally complex, but in different ways, you know. And I think, you know, with Little Blue, one thing I'm proud of is the sound world, the sonically the world of it, because I think that there's dimension in that that really felt new in writing it and in mixing it and crafting it, and that I think that world contains kind of almost as much depth as some of these like crazy chords do. But
they're also wonderful.
Which are really fun. But it's like it's a different kind of depth, and I'm proud of the space that I believe there is for people to walk in and find themselves in the song. Mm. You know?
All right, so Jesse 4 is complete. So it's a little bit sad.
It's wild. I can't believe it's finished.
What have you learned about yourself in the creation? Maybe we can contain it to, you know, this particular piece of the project, or if you want the whole project.
Yeah.
And what do you want to do?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. When I started Jesse, and I made the plan for it. I remember writing this down on a text editor, but one of my ideas was like, by the end of Jesse Volume 4, which is way in the distance back then, I will be ready to start my career. That was what I planned. I thought I will have learned enough about music in these different areas to have firsthand experience with it. If all goes to plan, to be able to contribute something of genuine value in all these different walks of life, whatever I'm called to do.
Okay, but let's just be clear, in the process of doing this, you have also connected with the most spectacular musicians on the planet.
Many would be
incredibly envious of. I remember seeing you years ago, maybe 2018 or 2019, and both Quincy Jones and Herbie Hancock were in the front row of the balcony watching you, and I was just like, oh my gosh, I can't imagine what it would be, and I know that these are friends. And
it's just been a wild, wild journey.
So you're going to start your career now.
Yeah.
Are we thinking accounting? Are we thinking
I might go into sort of Olympic skiing or something. But I wanted to feel like I had gone to the temples or gone to the places of all these parts of music that I've loved and been fascinated with for so long. And in so doing, I've just learned so much more than I had planned to learn. I began my career being obsessed with the human voice and the power of the human voice and what it could do. I wanted to...
Which is where we begin and where we end.
Yes, exactly. And I wanted to stretch in some of those early a cappella videos, how much could I say and do and explain with my voice, you know, sing the bass part, the tenor part, the alto part, whatever, and make these one-man vocal worlds. And I was obsessed with the human voice, and I was obsessed with the idea of harmony being the relationship between things in the world. Mm. And, you know, 10 years later, it's the same fascination, but I feel like I've learned so much more about me, about myself, and about my own voice, you could say, through the lens of all these other people's voices in the world. And getting to know some of these collaborators is a revelation in so many ways, musically and non-musically. And I think there's so much that we have in common as people. And you know, whether you're speaking with some of, you know, these world leaders of music, pop music, and some of the most, you know, some of the most beloved people on the planet, or you're speaking to a musician who's just beginning their journey, it's kind of like the same things matter. It's like, you know, what gives me goosebumps? Does it make me dance? Am I proud of it? Is it accurate to my perspective? You know, all these things. I've learned to be patient. I have learned to be patient. I've learned to dig deeper into how I honestly, truly feel about the world. I think I've learned how to be courageous with space, and also how to be courageous with filling space. I think there's a sort of myth that I perceived when I was growing up. It's the idea that if you're your biggest self, if you're the biggest, most brazen version of yourself that exists, then somehow you're going to remove space for others. There'll be less space for other people to be their big, beautiful selves and whatever. But I really deeply believe that's not true. And I think it's one thing I've really learned with these collaborations. The bigger you are, the more comfortable you feel in yourself, the more space there is for the people around you to be their big, beautiful selves. And I know this from experience because I've gone into sessions being quite meek, you know, kind of like, oh, whatever you want to do. I don't know, you whatever you want to do. And it's way harder to meet someone as an equal in that situation than if you walk into a room and say, these are my ideas. This is how I see the world. I may be wrong. I may be weird or bizarre or whatever, but this is me. This is me. Mm. And the more I've learned to do that as a person on stage, in the studio, as a producer, and just as a person, I think the more space I've perceived there being available to others around me to bring their selves, it's all welcome when I make music and I make it from a true place of Jacobness. I think what it does at its best for me is it reminds me that the world is so much bigger than me and there's still so much to learn.
So we've gone from being in your room to having created this entire multiverse of music.
Yeah.
It's an incredible gift. And really, thank you for sharing it so candidly.
Oh, you know, thanks for receiving it.
Can I ask you one bonus question?
Of course.
This is a question a friend really wanted me to ask. Mm-hmm. Do you dream in music?
Do I dream in music? I'll tell you a story, actually. This is a funny story about this album. I don't normally dream songs, right? Yeah. I hear stories, people being like, I had this dream and I wrote a whole song and I woke up and then I just had, that was the song. And I always used to think, well, that must be nice. You know, I've had no experience with that. Then about 5 or 6 months ago, I had a dream. And in the dream, I was with this group of friends. I guess they were musicians. A lot of my friends are musicians. And we were playing a game. One of those dreams where it doesn't quite make sense, but it makes complete sense at the same time. And the game was, you pick up these, it's almost like die, like you know, you're rolling die. You pick up these die, or dice, and you throw them, and they weren't really dice. They were like weird dream state globules of like undefined matter. But anyway, we threw them on the table, and whatever words it landed as saying, mm-hmm. you had to write that song. So I, in the dream, picked up these globules, sort of dream state globules of cuboid matter, threw them on the table. And on the table it said, "She put sunshine." That's what it said on the table. And so in the dream I was kind of like, "Oh, okay. Well, I guess I'll write that song then." And then I woke up, and I was like, "Well, I obviously have to write the song She Put Sunshine." So I sat in my bed on my laptop, and I just wrote the lyrics. And it was almost like someone had been like, "This song needs to be written. You can't change the title." I can't tell you how helpful it was not to be able to change the title, because if you can change the title, then everything can fall apart at any moment. It's like the main right. North Star is gone and
right.
the indecision takes over. This song had to be called She Put Sunshine. And I wrote the song in it was like an hour. And then I went downstairs. I spent the whole day like recording the song. And that's the second song on the record. I've never had that experience before. It was the first time ever. And I really enjoyed it because it was like something was speaking through me that it was unavailable to be altered by me, and my opinion of it couldn't shift it, you know. And my mind moves so quickly that if I'm writing a song, I can just change my mind. It's like, oh, now I was using, oh, you know, constant chatter. But that held me together for just long enough that I wrote the song, and so that actually is an experience I've had with dreaming in music, and I would like to do more of that kind of thing. Not that it's within my control necessarily, but it was fun.
Do you mind? Could we hear maybe just the chorus of that song and say goodbye?
Yeah, of course. Gosh, what key is that song in? It's in G, I think. Yeah, so the chorus of that song goes,
and I get a little lonely, and she comes to me, she illuminates me. And if she ever gets close to me, well, it's plain to see, she'd incinerate me, but I can't help her giving me her sunshine smile. But that sunshine smile.
Thank you, Jacob. That was so beautiful.
Thanks so much.
That was, what a delight.
Switched On Pop is produced by Charlie Harding and me, Nate Sloan. Our producer is Rihanna Cruz. Our editor is Art Chung. Brandon McFarland does our mixing and engineering. Abby Barr, community management. Illustrations by Iris Gottlieb. And Nishat Kurwa is our executive producer. We're a production of the Vox Media Podcast Network and New York Mag's Vulture. You can find more episodes of our show anywhere you get podcasts. You can check out our website, switchedonpop.com. We can also sign up for our newsletter. And we'll be back next Tuesday with a brand new episode. If there's anything you think of between now and then, reach out to us on social media at switchedonpop and tell us what you're hearing. Tell us what you love about Jacob Collier. Tell us anything else that's on your mind. Occasionally we do a listener mailbag episode, and that's always fun. So we love hearing what your burning musical questions are. I think all that remains is for me to say thanks for listening.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Why do you run? Why does anyone?
I always thought that runners loved running, and that's not the case. Most runners hate running, but they choose to do it.
In the new docuseries, Running Sucks, brought to you by Team Milk, Abby Ayers learns why women runners everywhere are driven to go the distance.
It really is about taking my power back and proving myself wrong.
Team Milk is about fueling women's performance and helping them along their marathon journeys. You can sign up now for the inaugural Every Woman's Marathon, taking place in Savannah, Georgia on November 16th, 2024. Learn more and register at everywomansmarathon.com.